The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
The Major Spoilers Podcast covers news, reviews, and of course, spoilers, and goes into details about the topics discussed. So if you haven't read, listened, or watched the items we talk about, you might want to come back later.
I'm Matthew.
I'm Rodrigo.
And I'm Steven, and you're listening to the Major Spoilers Podcast, the podcast for pop culture and comic fans.
In this issue, the perils of online dating, the joys of eating stuff you find in a cave, and boots of crocodile black. You must be this tall to get into Devilland, and you might never leave. Kind of like the Hotel California with more barf bags. The Major Spoilers team is ready to talk the talk. Steven can walk the walk because I got bad knees. And your favorite pop culture is hanging in the balance. Head down the midway and climb aboard the comet because the Major Spoilers podcast is on the air.
Welcome to episode 1074 of the Major Spoilers Podcast. Thank you so much for downloading and checking us out this week. Hey, you guys see that new Superman picture?
Mm-hmm. You mean depressed policeman Superman who's like, oh God, I guess I'll put on my boots.
Is that your take on the image? Is that your take
on
the image?
Yeah, he looks like a cop. He looks like he's exhausted. He doesn't want to do it. He's outside. There's like explosions in the sky. Something bad is happening. And he's like, oh, God, I guess I'll go do it.
Wow. Yeah, I have a total different take on it.
Rodrigo, what do you feel it looks like?
So if you look at it really closely, yes, there is something massive happening in the sky where somebody's blowing up a metropolis or whatever. And here you see a man putting on his boots to go to work. And if you look, his suit is already cruddy. His suit is already dirty. It's already burnt in places. Mm-hmm. So as someone, and Matthew, you grew up in the country. I don't know if you grew up on a farm, but I grew up in the country and I had lots of friends that were farm kids and I would go to the farm and help out occasionally. But I see somebody who has that kind of Kansas farmer mentality of, well, I just got back from a hard day's work of saving the planet. I'm ready to kick back, but now there's another world-shaking event, so I'm putting my boots back on, and I'm going to go out and save the day. So this is somebody that is just not like, this says that this is not a person who's, I mean, he's tired. He's, you know, he is, even though he's not human, he is human. He was raised as a human. And I think that this is something that it's just like, not that, that he should be happy about going in and punching things, but he just feels like somebody who is, again, knowing the farmers that I know and knowing them where it's muddy and nasty outside and you just spend an hour chasing down the cattle through the muddy field because the fence fell down. And so you go out and it's a true story. You go out and you round up the cows and you get them all back into the pen and you're holding the fence so that, you know, the other guy can pound in the fence and repair it so the cows don't get out and you're all dirty and muddy and you go inside and you sit down by the fire, you take off your boots, you start to undress and you hear, honey, the cows are out again. And you're just like, okay, let's put the boots back on and let's just get back to it. So that's what this image says to me, is a guy who is somebody who's probably tired from saving the world. I'm not saying that he's tired as in fed up. I'm saying he's probably exhausted from this last mission. And there is something that is coming in trying to destroy the world. And instead of just saying, well, it's the end of my day, my shift is over, I'm going to, have a beer and watch the game. He's like, well, I got to put my boots back on and I got to go fly and save the day again, because that's my job. Now, I will say that because this is a publicity image, we had to see the actor's face. I don't know what his name is. Crenshaw or
David Scrotum, or no, Corin Sweat.
Okay. Corin Sweat. Yeah. I understand that as a publicity photo, we need to see his face, but if this were a comic book cover, and this is super close to being a comic book cover, you could take this. And the only thing you would have to do is Superman turning his head and looking out the window, behind him as he's putting on your boots, and that would add a level of urgency to it. But in comic books, we know what Superman looks like. So if his head is slightly turned away on the comic book cover, we understand because we get the idea that Superman is about to rush out and save the day. But I think because of the publicity photo, they have his face turned more to focus on putting on his boots. And I think that's what makes everybody think that this is a sad sack Superman. So I think this is a really powerful image. And I think that people who have worked that physical labor, or, you know, even a fireman, you know, imagine a fireman comes back from a fire and he's exhausted, and then he's got to put his boots back on and go back out and stop another fire. To me, this was a powerful image. Rodrigo, what are your thoughts?
I mean, I agree that it's a powerful image, and I understand a lot of people who are like, why is Superman sad now?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
The real power of this image to me is that when you think back at the Superman that we've had, it's like, I feel like the Snyder Superman, I'm like, did we ever see him like sit down?
No, I don't think so.
He was there for a minute and then he died. So he did a lot of lying.
So it's like, this is a Superman that sits down. You know, there was that old, Batman.
Batman doesn't
sit, right? It's like Batman doesn't sit down. It's like, this is a Superman that sits down. Already that, like, humanizes it so much more, right? Again, when you think about the, like, Man of Steel, Justice League, whatever, Superman, he is always floating above. He is always, like, helping people, and then a bunch of, like, the other Mortals people are trying to touch him, but they don't touch him. And he doesn't get any closer to them for them to touch him, right? It's like, all of these, like, vignettes of, like, this alien power that he has. It's like the only emotion that he has is anger. And if he's not feeling angry, then he's feeling nothing, right? It's like, this Superman is feeling something, right?
Yep.
He's feeling something. And you might not like what he's feeling, or you might think that, you know, it's like, oh, this isn't, like, indicative of a Superman that I want to watch. And that's totally fair. But again, the real power in this is that this is a different take on Superman. You can tell he's feeling something. He's sitting down. He does look tired, right? It's like, how many Supermen have we seen that look tired? I think there might have been, like, a little bit for, like, the Christopher Reeve Superman, where he, like, you know, he's like, oh boy, I gotta go back out again, or something like that, you know.
But he always had a smile on his face, right? That was the thing with the Christopher Reeve Superman, is he always had a smile on his face. The other thing is, this is the debut of this suit and this actor in the suit, and they chose to go with a suit that is battle damaged, which I thought was a very nice touch. All the other times that we've seen a Superman suit, it has been clean and pristine and stuck to the body. And I'm like, this feels real.
I'm bugged by how much of it is coming from the 2011 Superman Jim Lee redesign with
all the symbols and all the ribs.
I do like the trunks. I do like Kirk Allen's haircut. Did you notice that he has the Kirk Allen spit curl off to the side?
Yeah.
Okay.
From like 45.
And doesn't he have notch boots that you're always a big fan of?
Those aren't Superman notches. Superman notches, they're like that. But yeah, like notch side. Notch boots are important. Now, Superman, traditionally, they're a triangle notch, and I'm fine with this because it does notch the boots. You got to have notched boots for Superman, and I am 200% on board for, I hope it's real, because it looks like there's trunks, but we really can't see.
No, there's trunks. You can zoom in on that. You can see that there's red. If you look at Superman's crotch, it feels like
they're trying to hide the trunks.
No.
Where they're like, he's sitting down because we're ashamed of the trunks. But yeah, I'm fine. Yeah. It just, Calamity John today said he looks like a cop, and I can't unsee that. And I feel like, you know, we were talking in the pre-show discussion, which I think is only available to our Patreon members, right?
Yep.
Right? But yeah, we were talking about some stuff with that. And I feel like bringing that into Superman in 2024, again, one static image 2 years before the film, and I'm totally, you know,
maybe we can compromise and say that he looks like a first responder. So he could be a
fireman vibes.
yeah.
Yes. He looks like a paramedic in trunks.
He is an essential worker, just like me. He's putting on his boots and he's going to go help a man drive to the DMV and renew his license.
Yeah.
Nice.
Yeah. And yeah, so I like it. I dig it. I know other people don't. And certainly it's controversial. I've seen this light up the internet. And so just like Matthew has a different take on it than Rodrigo. Yeah, no. Just as Matthew has a different take on it than Rodrigo and I do, maybe you have a different take on this as well, dear listener. Head over to our Discord server where you can talk about this in the Major Spoilers channel or the General channel or the Movies channel, whatever channel that you want. The best part is the Major Spoilers Discord server is absolutely free. And in this economy, where can you get stuff that's free that provides so much fun, so much satisfaction, so many entertaining, enjoyable, wonderful people over there? It's our growing community of Spoilerites, and you can be part of that and talk all about the new Superman picture. There's a link in the show notes, and maybe a Superman waiting on your arrival when you show up. All right, let's get to some reviews. And Rodrigo, I am curious because I thought this show was over already, but apparently not.
It's not. Same. I was talking with TTRPG Brian. I think he likes to go by nowadays.
Yep.
Yeah, he was like, wait, the show's still going? And I'm like, yeah, man, you're like three episodes behind now. Because it did have a big moment that seemed like a perfectly good season cliffhanger. And then it keeps going. Delicious in Dungeon. The show about, you know, these like fun adventurers are going down to the dungeon and they kill monsters just like adventurers do. But unlike most adventurers, then they turn around and eat them. Which is better, question mark? So if you've never seen it, this isn't much of a spoiler. The show starts in a very serious note and then gets much lighter afterwards, right? It's like, we know that there's a serious thing that the characters have to do when they're delving into the dungeon for that reason, for a very important personal reason, which we know. I'm just not saying it because, you know, people haven't seen it or whatever. So they go and they accomplish the thing, but they do it in a way that's not great. And it absolutely comes back and bites them in the butt. And now we are at this place where multiple adventuring parties had come by and sort of had conversations and helped each other and stuff. But our core heroes are back by themselves. The stakes are very high. But specifically this last episode, episode 18, is about, it's kind of like a return to form. Like things have been very intense for several episodes. And now in this episode, all of a sudden they go through this storm inside the dungeon. And when they come out, there are three, or actually probably like five of each of them. Well, I guess that would be... I guess, yeah, there would be three of each of them. Because there's four of them. And we sort of figure out that these are shapeshifters or illusions of some kind. And that they are based on how they see each other. So it's actually really funny when see like two, like basically three versions of a character that look very close to each other. And it's going to be difficult to tell. And one that looks like extremely different. Right? And you're like, and they don't really go into like whose version of that character is that one. Like Marcel, the elf character, you know, she's like a, you know, light, cute elf girl. And then there's one that like looks like one of them looks like handsome Squidward. I don't know if you guys have seen that meme around.
Yeah.
So it's kind of a return to like that sort of like funnier. But of course, the doubles are sinister. They're part of the dungeon ecology, which means almost certainly something is trying to eat the characters. We just kind of have a little episode like that. I'm having a lot of fun with it. I'm bumping up the rating to 5 out of 5.
Nice.
Slices of, I don't know, hippogriff meatloaf.
doppelganger loaf. Yeah.
And you know, I've been outspoken about the fact that like people are like, hey, have you read this fantasy novel with like elves and dwarves? And I'm like, no, and I'm not going to. One, because I don't read a lot of novels, and two, because I'm tired of medieval fantasy stuff. And they're like, you know, people can be like, this is not just medieval fantasy stuff. This is like very D&D. Like, this has like D&D, like this is Waterdeep. This is Diablo. This is like, you know, these like very popular and therefore sort of traditional fantasy tropes. Why are you into this and not into other stuff? And the reason is because it's doing something different with it, right? It's like taking those things and remixing them. And all of a sudden, I'm like, now I'm interested in this. Just like I'm interested in that Metaphor game that's coming out, where it's a fantasy game, but it's by the Persona guys. So you have to worry about a calendar. And I'm like, I play Persona 5. And one of the weird things that I found out about myself is like, I like to worry about a fictional calendar. So there you go.
I'm curious. Is this a must see TV for you? Because this is being released weekly on Netflix.
Right now, it is the only like appointment TV show that I have, I think.
Okay.
You know, partially because Invincible is over, or this season is over. I was watching both, but I would watch Delicious in Dungeon first before watching Invincible. I feel like there was something else that I was kind of watching along, but this thing not only has like a big season, it's probably going to be 22, 23 episodes or something like that. But also, yeah, it's like, it's not necessarily that it has like huge cliffhangers, although it does sometimes. It's just like, you don't know what's going to happen. Like, you don't know what's going to happen next. You don't know what turn the characters are going to take. You don't know who's safe. Like, it's interesting. It's interesting. And it's like a good, solid narrative.
Very cool. I dropped off after episode 4 or 5, the hidden armor or the haunted armor episode.
And if you watch it and you're like, I'm not into these characters taking, honestly, the majority of the episode to cook a monster, eat it, and talk about it, like, that doesn't go away. So,
oh yeah, no.
If that's what turned you off, then that's not going away.
It was just one of those things where it's like, shiny, new shiny thing. It distracted me. I think it was probably
Shogun.
Yeah. I really got a kick out of that. And I just haven't. And there's a couple of other shows that are currently sitting on my in progress list on Netflix and other services that I just haven't gone back to. Not because I didn't think they were good, but just because I was like, there's something else that I'm really interested in watching a little bit more than this.
If Fallout hadn't been dropped all at once, it would have also been appointment TV.
Yes,
for me.
I would agree with you completely on that. Yeah, that I think is the biggest misstep. I think that's a
so
huge misstep.
Much. I hated Fallout with the fury about that. I saw every episode. Watched every second. Hated it.
Yeah, we talked about it, I think.
Yeah,
didn't
you're entitled. Yeah. You're entitled to hate it. That's okay.
That's Matthew's Deathclaw impression.
Yeah.
Yeah.
When he turns into a ghoul, right? Okay.
Oh, yeah.
Let us talk, Matthew, something that came out last week. Crave number 6 of 6 from Image Comics.
Crave, or since the artist is Spanish, I believe it might be Crave, number 6, written and drawn by Maria Jove, published by Image Comics. Here's the thing about Crave. The first issue of Crave came out, and I wanted to talk about it, and something happened, and I didn't. And then the second issue of Crave came out, and I wanted to talk about it on this show, and I didn't. And every single episode or every single issue of Crave has come up at a point where something happened, something else got involved, or I didn't, you know, get the time to write it, or I didn't think about it in time, and it was outside the window, or whatever had happened. So I am now going to tell you about Crave number 6. First thing you need to know about Crave is that Crave is the story of a small college and a social media app called Crave, where you tell it what you want and it tells you the steps you need to take to get it. And through maybe mind control, maybe social engineering, maybe a little bit of both or a little bit of everything, these things start working. So in the very first issue, there's a character who really wants to sleep with his professor. And so they do. And they do it very graphically. And in the second issue, the main characters,
the people that I think of as the main characters anyway, of this particular story, are in the library together. And he's like, I really want to have sex with her on the library table right now. And she texts back, well, come on. And so it is a very graphic, very sexual series. And
her, the creator does a lot of that in her books. They're very sexually oriented.
And really beautiful, too. That's the thing that I really appreciate about it. Sometimes it's hard to do comic book sex, especially, and have it not feel weird or prurient or, I don't know the word I'm looking for, maybe just a little too stylized and crazy. Skeevy is a word, but I was thinking more about, you know, there are times when you go out and you're like, say you're on Tumblr. I don't know why you're on Tumblr, but you're on Tumblr. And you're like, oh, hey.
Yeah, to look at the fantastic art.
Hey, look at this picture. Yeah. And then you're like, kapow. Well, this is the character that I know, but I didn't realize that her buttocks were the size of the Liberty Bell. You know, and again, no judgment. Your kink is your kink. It's your deal. Not in any way relevant to this comic, but in the very first issue, everybody was using Crave, and our main character discovered an important thing. And you know what that thing said? Don't use Crave. So, yeah, David has, in fact, used Crave and has, in fact, connected with Alexandra, the girl that he's in love with. Meanwhile, two other characters who ended up locked in an elevator together because he was in love with her are like, oh, man, we have to stop this. We have to do this. And he's like, but without Crave, I would have never found the courage to ask you out. And, you know, then they have the kissy kissy. And the thing that's really wonderful about this is that it almost feels like an epilogue chapter. If you read issue 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, at the end of 5, you're really at the point where the story has kind of, you should excuse the expression, climaxed. And so issue 6 is really cleanup. Again, apologize, that's not intentional, but you really have the emotional resonance and you have like all of the awful, terrible things that have happened now affecting everybody and the college trying to come to terms with what has happened. Everybody changed, everybody having seen all these terrible things. The secret of Crave is a creepy, terrible secret. And most of our couples end up coupling together in the ways that they're supposed to. I feel like the story led us in the right direction to see who's supposed to be with whom. But as you get to the end of this issue, it's really just David, who was worried about the whole time, worried about his grades, finding out that he's second in the class. And who's first? Alexandra. And they're so happy that they share their first kiss without being creepily social media engineered. And it's the sweetest thing ever. Until you see the final panel that says, test 002, preparing to launch. Oh, man. So, first of all, if you are not 18 years old, do not go anywhere near this comic. This is an adult comic. I don't want you reading it. You are not ready for it. Secondly, if you are above 18 years old, this is a really good book. This is a book that manages to be about sex. It manages to depict sex and romance and sexual relationships in a way that feels both realistic, but also kind of the cinematic thing. You do have some meet cutes. You do have some big crazy moments. You do have that thing where everybody figures out exactly what they need to do to have sex the first time, which I'm not saying it doesn't happen in real life. I'm just saying these people aren't fat. But more importantly, I came out of this rooting for couples and rooting for certain outcomes based on the character interactions, the emotions, and the way the story was set up. The sex is there. The sex is important. It's part and parcel of the story, but it's not the thing that keeps me coming back to the book. And when it comes to a book that a lot of people have referred to, and I've heard it referred to as vaguely pornographic or outright pornographic, that's exciting to me. I like the fact that the story is what's important. The sex is there. The sex is well-drawn. It's beautiful. You know, it's impossible. That's fine.
But it's also something that that's not the reason we're here necessarily, but it's also part of the reason we're here. And so it's not ignored, but it's definitely not the only focus. Four slices of meatloaf for Crave number six. I will say this. The one thing that really gets to me, and it gets me every time, is that I think it's pronounced Jove. That's how I would pronounce it if I were pronouncing it with my eighth grade Spanish.
Crave.
But it's L-L-O-V-E-T, and I'm thinking Jove. Jove?
So if it's Spanish, it would be Jovet.
Jovet? Okay, my bad. So Spanish and French. So Jovet. But there are points in this film, or in this, I see, and that's what it is. There are points in this story where the characters make eye contact with the reader's perspective as though it were the camera. And it feels like a real actor spiking the camera. And it's incredibly, just incredibly effective. These characters act, and they act in individual ways. And that is really hard for an artist to pull off. So I have to just throw my hat off.
She's a great artist. I really,
she's an incredible artist.
When she was doing that crazy My Father's the Devil or whatever book it was over at Boom Studios.
Yeah, what was that?
I don't remember. I know we talked about it a couple of times.
Something Satan Sex. Yeah, there was a part two and recently a part three.
Yeah.
That I actually checked in on and kind of enjoyed. But
yeah. If you know the creator, then you know that's she kind of has that theme running through a lot of her books, but she's a great artist. Yeah.
So just absolutely, man. And a really good writer. Again, four slices of meatloaf for Crave number six. Check it out if you're an adult, and if you're not squeamish, if reading a story where 20 somethings are having sex as part of the story, and sometimes as part of the background, because it's that kind of story, you may want to step aside. Otherwise, yeah, definitely check it out.
So this week, go ahead, Rodrigo.
Yeah, it would be grave.
Grave?
If it was grave, it would have an accent, I think.
Ah, better than.
Yeah. Grave, right. Llave, like key, llave.
This is my problem. The child is teaching me French. Mm. And so the French is slowly.
That's going to throw you off.
It is. And the French is slowly encroaching on my Spanish, which you have kindly referred to as eighth grade Spanish in the past. And so I feel like, you know, now that I'm going to be speaking French and Spanish together, I feel like I should get credit for two languages.
I gave up on Italian. I'm like, I speak a little tiny bit of French. I speak Spanish fluently. Yeah. Try to speak Italian. It's too close to Spanish, but not close enough, right? So I'm like, it's forget like Portuguese. Forget it. This is actually, Portuguese would have probably been easier, but yeah, I give up on Italian.
Yeah. All right. This week from Boom Studios, I am taking a look at Crocodile Black number one from Philip K. Johnson and the artist Soam. This is a story that was described as a noir tale. And I was like, okay, I'm into that. But I will say that this is a very, in my opinion, dark book. This takes place in the 2020s, pandemic time, where everybody's wearing masks or not wearing masks, etc. And we are introduced to a young man. I guess he's still in high school because he lives with his parents. And his name is Danny. And he has a problem with escapism in that he fantasizes things a lot. He imagines things a lot and he gets lost in his escapism, so much so that he's going to a therapist and it's become a problem. And as the story is going on, he has problems with his parents. There are some dark implications in this book. One, that he may have had something to do with his younger brother's death, ? That is something that I think this series will explore, but it's kind of hinted in the first part of this. But during one of his many deliveries, because he's like an Uber driver type person, he's making a grocery delivery to a man by the name of Mr. Black, and he discovers that he's died. We don't know from what, but he's died, and Danny is enthralled with these black crocodile boots that he's wearing, and he steals those boots. And then 6 months later, we are at crime scenes where people have been brutally murdered. And the implication of the story is being told is that Danny is also doing these brutal murders because he likes wearing a mask. He likes that people can't see him. He He likes to go into these escapist fantasies that his therapist and his family have warned him about. And this is a dark book just from that, in that I read Danny as somebody who has a mental illness. There's nothing wrong. I mean, those can, you know, he's going to therapy and he's taking his drugs, his medications and everything. But if Danny is the one that we eventually find out, which is the way the story's been told, is that it's the implication is that Danny is doing these murders. I think that that is maybe somewhat problematic, where you're talking about how people with mental illness have criminal tendencies and are willing to act on those criminal tendencies. I don't think that's a good message to send out into the world personally myself. Now, the story may go in a completely different direction, and if so, great. But also the implication that he may have been somehow involved or knows too much about his younger brother's murder or death or whatever. We don't say murder, but it is a death, is also somewhat disturbing. So this is a book that I went into thinking, oh yeah, this is going to be some like noir revenge kind of thing. And it's like, no, let's get inside the mind of a serial killer. And I'm not sure that that's the book that I want to read. It's very well told from what it is. The art is very well done. The sequence where Danny is taking off the boots of the dead man is masterfully done, because it's done in parallel with the crime scene of these people investigating these dead bodies. And I thought that was very well done. The art is solid. The story is solid. It is maybe just a little bit too dark and a little bit too intense for my liking. And that's not to say that this isn't solid. I'm giving it 3.5 slices of meatloaf. I think it's good, but I do want people to be aware that if they think this is going to be some happy fun time murders type story, it ain't that. It's dark, and it's disturbing on a couple of levels. So I would be aware if people go out for that. Still worth checking out. I don't have a problem. I've seen Soames art before. I think it's fine. And I don't have a problem with that. Same way with Philippa K. Johnson. I've read the stuff by this writer before, and I think it's fine. This just happened to hit me on a day where I was like, yeah, I don't want to know about teenagers going around killing people during pandemic times and implicating mental illness with the reason why they're doing these things. And so that's why I'm giving it a ding down. It probably would have at least had a half a meatloaf slice up, had it gone in a different direction. I hope it goes in a completely different direction. I hope it turns out that Danny is the one who's actually tracking down the serial, you know, killer and doing things, but I don't think that's going to happen. So that's my thoughts on Crocodile Black, number one, out this week from Boom Studios. And with the reviews out of the way, let's try this again. We'll be right back.
After these messages, we'll be right back.
The future is a hefty responsibility, and not one that we take lightly. But then, taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
Thank you to everyone who supports the show and all the shows in the Major Spoilers Podcast Network. This week, we are sending huge thanks, just like we did last week to J. Michael T. This week, we're sending huge thanks to Jimbo Fett, who made a large contribution to Major Spoilers this week. Because of Jimbo and other fine spoilerites, we're getting closer to getting a new computer to replace the one that went down a few weeks ago and is doing some mysterious like shutdowns and restarts for no reason. So if you want to keep this show going, I mean, yeah, I'll walk away for a few hours and I'll come back and it says, this computer restarted for unknown reasons. Would you like to report it? I'm like, yes, let's report it. But at the same time, I don't want this thing to crap out and we're stuck again with no weeks off of shoes. So we're about $1,500 away from getting this computer replaced. And if you'd like to contribute to the new computer fund, then and get a shout out on the show, just like we're doing for Jimbo Fett here, then head over to patreon.com/majorspoilers. Now, Matthew alluded to it at the beginning of the show, but when you become a silver level patron, you get access to 4 bonus episodes each month that you're not going to find anywhere else. That includes the Major Spoilers Podcast pre-show, where this week we were talking about why Steven likes to shout at clouds and why he doesn't go to movie theaters anymore. So you're going to get 4 episodes of that each month, not that particular topic, but of the, I mean, wouldn't it be great if we just every month were like, Stephen, let us talk about your hatred of the AMCs. When did they touch you in the bad spot? We could do that every week at the silver level membership if you want it, but I would prefer we do other things. But here's the thing. If you go up to the gold level, a mere $10 a month, you get up to 8 bonus episodes. Plus you get access to the, GM Roundtable, where I talk about what I'm doing for our RPG Real Play Podcast Critical Hit. You can hear me build the game in the background and you can see what's coming up. I find it fascinating. I was just listening to the most recent one. I'm like, oh yeah, I telegraphed exactly what I was going to do about 3 months ahead of when we're actually going to do it. If you want that kind of inside look into building a game and a big campaign, then you definitely want to check that out. That's only available at the gold level. And Dr. Brad Will, finally, this is something that, I don't know, it started as a lark because Brad wanted to talk about the TV series Sugar on Apple TV Plus. If you guys haven't seen that, it's a fascinating thing. So Brad and I have recorded 3 episodes of what I'm calling the Monday Mystery Matinee. That's available for any paid patron at the $2 and higher level. So if you want to get those sporadically, I'm not sure this is an ongoing show. This is just us talking about our love of mysteries. Then you definitely want to sign up today at patreon.com/majorspoilers. All this bonus stuff you can't get in any feed other than the secret RSS feed that you get when you become a patron at patreon.com/majorspoilers. Yeah. Were you going to say something about Sugar, Rodrigo?
Nope. I was okay. Yep. I know Brad Will.
Yeah, you know that Brad Will. That guy has got some thoughts in his head, and we're shaking him out week after week.
He's got opinions.
Oh, he does. He's got some opinions. Speaking of opinions, let's talk about Dark Ride Volume 1. This is from Image Comics, another Image Comics on our list this week. This one, I will say, this ends on a cliffhanger, and I do believe the second arc of Dark Ride has already started. This is by Joshua Williamson, who's currently doing Transformers and not G.I. Joe proper, because that is Larry Hama, but he's also doing the, I think, Duke and Cobra Commander stories over at Image Comics, or for Skybound, I should say. And then the art by, Andre Brisson and Andriano Lucas, I believe, if I'm mispronouncing, sorry. But this is a horror comic about a place called Devilland. Think Disneyland, Disney World, think Disney World, a theme park that instead of the happiest place on earth is the scariest place on earth.
And we are man can, cause he draws a pentagram and kills a goat in the middle. Sorry, go on.
This is, we learn about Arthur Dante and his 2 children, Sam Hain and Halloween, and the financial problems that the park is having because people maybe just aren't into the scary stuff like they used to be. Think Freddy Krueger showing and chasing you around a park, or Michael Myers chasing you around a park, or just the devil popping up and taking your children at a park. You know, good times.
Yeah.
And so they're looking for ways that they can make the park popular again. And then a kid gets in there who's a huge fan of the dark, of the
park, and
the park, Devilland. And he is murdered. And of course that changes everything. Everybody now wants to go to the murder park.
Murder park.
So I will say this right off the top. There is a publishing, or there was a publishing company. I haven't heard from them for years and I haven't looked into them. Devils Do Publishing. Mm-hmm. And so when the ride that Arthur Dante creates is called the Devils Do. And so I keep thinking about that publisher and the logo for Devilland, whatever the little character's name is. Satan-y or whatever. Also looks a little bit like a cartoonified version of their logo.
Nice.
So I don't know if that's unintentional or what, but there you go. What'd you think, Rodrigo?
I haven't heard about GDP in like 10 years.
Yeah.
So this was my suggestion for reading. And I mostly enjoyed it. I had read, I think, maybe the first 2 issues when I
when they first came out. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. As they were coming out. the thing that I really enjoy about this is that there's no interestingly, there's no rails. Like here's the story of a guy who kills somebody, makes a deal for his park to be huge and amazing and always bopping. But then we cut forward and he has two adult children, some of whom have children of their own. There's all this other stuff going on. The park is like haunted in some way. I'm like there's nothing to grab onto. There's no like, you know, we read a lot of stuff on the show and a lot of stuff is tropey or it like relies on sort of like well-worn structures. And we might enjoy it because of the way that the characters interact or the way that it's written or the way that it's drawn or whatever, just because something has a standard kind of plot to it doesn't mean that it's boring or bad. But Dark Ride, there's kind of like, it's just kind of all over the place. Like, I think in a very good way, like we kind of don't get introduced to the potentially main character, like
the third issue or something like that. Yeah,
a heroic character until three issues in.
Yeah,
and like for all we know, that character is gonna die.
Yeah, oh right? Maybe. Like, yeah,
we just have no idea. We kind of get introduced to her brother, and he dies.
It's a very psycho. It's a very psycho opening, right? Where you're following this very famous, well known actress that people want to see in the movie. And, you know, 15 minutes in, she's dead. And it's like, okay, now what? Well, now there's the people that want to investigate her disappearance. And that's exactly what's going on here. You know, his sister's an investigative journalist. She shows up at the park, but at the same time, there's so many other things going on.
Yeah. Yeah, there's so many characters. Like, you're introduced to, like, a ton of characters. Like, everybody who, like, you meet everybody behind the scenes.
Mm-hmm.
Of the park, and then they're just around. Like, none of them are really come to the fore, but they'll be like, hey, you know, the D's or whatever, like the people watchers are gonna have like a thing here at lunch. You want to come over and see it? It's like, oh yeah, maybe I'll catch you later or whatever. And it's like, it really lets you into the park and into like knowing who they all are, and hopefully for good reason.
Mm-hmm.
Hopefully that'll pay off later as well. But it never felt like, you know, sometimes you like read a book and you're introduced to like two dozen characters, and it's clearly because like the author loves their characters, and they're like, and then there's this guy and his power is this, and then there's this guy and his power is this, right? Mm-hmm. That's not what it felt like. But yeah, go back through like the first handful of pages of the first issue. There's a ton of characters.
Yeah.
And they're all just kind of going about their business. They just take like a quick second to introduce all of them.
And it is unclear. Again, I forget when the issue 6 came out and when the trade came out in 2023, March, almost a year ago, or over a year ago. And this ends in a weird way, but I know that Dark Ride is coming back. So I want to know more of that story. And maybe these characters play a bigger role, or just like in Jurassic Park where you had Newman shows up and then he gets killed off and you're like, ah, ha, ha. You know, we don't know if that's what's going to happen here with a lot of these characters. Maybe it will, because suddenly when the Dante family realizes that real death is an attractor, I can see all these people suddenly being taken out in a very, you know, horror villain, you know, Freddy Krueger, Michael Myers type way throughout the rest of the thing. But this is really trippy, and it's trippy because of the dark nature of the story, but I also find it somewhat amusing because I don't know if I've talked about, I worked at Disney World for one summer, in Florida, when I was in college, and it was a great time, but like all these things that they're talking about, and people who are Disney files will know all of these things. So it's like, they're not hiding the fact that they are totally ripping off everything Disney in they're doing with the park and having fun with it, but turning it into a very dark, dark version of that. And I kind of get a kick out of that.
Yeah. It feels like an alternate timeline where instead of like funny stories about like funny pictures about a mouse, it was like horror, right? That's what people were into. And so that's the park that got made.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Matthew, what'd you think of Dark Ride?
I'm torn. You ever read something and there's one absolutely insignificant, just niggling little detail that keeps punching you right in the face, and you feel like it shouldn't matter. Absolutely shouldn't matter.
I mean, constantly. We're on a podcast, it, Matthew. Like, you know, both of us have stuff like that.
Right. I'm just saying, you're supposed to then agree with me. Okay. Right. So here's the thing, and this is very important. I have a friend. My friend is a Wiccan. Beautiful young lady. Sweetest girl you ever met. Samhain is pronounced Samhain.
Oh, okay.
I cannot not read Samhain. And then people are calling him Sam. So clearly in universe, they're pronouncing it Samhain. Right. And I'm like, yeah. Okay. So that is fine.
I mean, it could be that, or I know the correct pronunciation, but every time I see it, all I can say is Samhain.
Samhain.
But at the same time, if I saw somebody with their tag that said that, I would be like, "Oh, Samhain, can I call you Sam for short?" And maybe he's okay with that, or maybe that's how they pronounce it in universe. Who knows?
In it, because we ran into this with Resident Alien.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But in that universe, a writer uses the pseudonym Sam space Hain, which really between that and this just leads me to think that most people don't know that Samhain is pronounced Samhain, or that there's potentially a more similar pronunciation to Samhain, because, you know, like, you know, Wicca, neo-paganism, all that stuff spans a lot of Europe, so there could be other pronunciations of it. I don't know.
Europe is big.
Yeah.
So when I get into this, when you said there were no rails, that is exactly how I felt in this. And on the one hand, I did love, especially the point where we see the statue of old man Dante. And I'm not saying Sidney Wallace.
Oh no, it's Walt Disney. It's Walt Disney. That's a famous statue in Disney World and Disneyland. That's totally Walt Disney holding on to Mickey's hand. So yeah.
But there are a lot of things in here that I feel like should be entirely my jam. Like I love a good slasher movie. I love a horror movie, but there's actually a really stupid horror movie called Nothing But Trouble with Dan Aykroyd. From like 1985. Can't watch it because there's a scene where a character dies. Actually, five characters die all at once in a horrifying way. And I just cannot get past the bone chilling horror of it. And so the last couple of pages of this book, I can never read again. I will never read again. It's not going to happen.
And so, it gets really weird at the end too, right? Like, what's the relationship between Halloween and Arthur? And why do we never see Arthur's face except his creepy smile dripping like
it's
stuff?
It's got this, there's something wrong with the top of his head. But it's also got these little elements of Five Nights at Freddy's that I really enjoy. And I feel like I never worked at Disney World. However, and my child has said, you're lying when I tell her this story. This is 100% true. The year between the summer between my junior and senior years of high school, I was a carny. And I literally went around with a traveling carnival. And all of these behind the scenes bits just remind me of trying to set up the Tilt-A-Whirl in such a way that nobody realizes that the shock absorber on the left rear is busted. So I felt like I loved that part. I loved the recurring YouTuber guy who seemed to think that being a YouTuber guy makes him special. He's like, you know, I'm a YouTuber. I don't know if you've heard, but I'm a YouTuber. And I'm just like, that's real. And then, you know, we have a point where Sam's daughter is like, I'm going to help daddy.
Oh yeah.
I'm going to help daddy with the horror.
And I'm like, okay. So imagine reading that and reading Crocodile Black back to back. And now you understand the dark mood that I'm in when I'm talking about, I'm not sure I like, you know, a kid willing to commit suicide, you know, slashing open her arms to help daddy, and another guy who may be mentally unstable going around maybe being a serial killer. So you can understand that this was not a good weekend to pick up comics and go, I'll read comics and be ahead on the podcast this week.
Yep. Does this have an adult tag?
No.
Like any type of content warning?
Nope.
Okay.
Nope.
All right. I feel like maybe it could auto. Oh, it does have mature, rated M for mature.
But I mean, everything is M for mature. That doesn't stop anything. I would say so. Sure. In the case of your comic book that you read this week, Crave, and anything that the creator does recently, they have been bagging those up. So the people, because even the covers are a little bit risque. And then Blood Hunt over at Marvel Comics has got a red band red band version. And so they are putting that in bags as well. So while it may have a mature tag, especially because of potential suicide attempt, and I don't even know if it's a suicide attempt because it's not, I mean,
if it's,
I don't know.
Yeah, if she's just, the devil is herself.
Yeah, the devil's making her do it.
Right, literally.
But it's still creepy to see a child go through that, right?
Yeah.
But again, a mature tag doesn't keep people away.
And the person is revealed to be not what they seem to be, and then there's like that, oh my God, I have not been so horrified by a cutesy sound effect since Don Martin's days at Mad Magazine, when Don Martin told me the sound of the Silver Surfer wiping out on an asteroid was oh God, those last few pages are chilling in a way that I
in which way? Which
I like horror. I like horror. And there are a lot of horror movies that I will tell you, watch this, but it'll creep you out. You know, and there are a lot of movies that I'm like, I watched that all the way through. I will never subject myself to that again. And that's kind of how I feel about the end of issue 4. This is like there's a movie called Inhuman Resources, which is terrible. There's a movie called Truth or Dare with Jeffrey Coombs from every Star Trek ever.
Oh, you're talking about what happens to the blogger guy? Is that what you're talking about?
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
That ending is just like, nope. That's terrifying. The sound effect from the mask.
Yeah.
The sound effects there, I'm just like, that's it. That's done. That is, you have gone too far for the fat man. I respect your artistic decision. You wanted to scare me. You scared me. But, you know, fool me once. Shame on you. Fool me twice.
Oh, yeah. This
can't
would be
fool me again.
I want to see John Carpenter make this. No, I want to see what's his name?
Rob Zombie.
No. Definitely not Rob Zombie make this.
David Cronenberg.
I want to see Cronenberg do all the visual effects for this movie. Because, Cronenberg, you know, the crazy mask at the end is terrifying. But it's also somewhat confusing because you've got Halloween who's running through this and she's a bad girl type. And you see something weird going on with her and her dad. And then at the end, she just reveals this thing like father, like daughter. And it's like, does that mean you're the one in charge? The devil has jumped from one to another? Or
we know that Walt or Dante sold his soul or did some sort of deal with a Satan to get the park. And I think that the implication is that whatever's going on with the by the way, extremely creepy, probably just demon animated mascot costumes.
That
is definitely her doing. And I feel like her doing may be trying to take away Daddy's park so much as like Sam is trying to save the park. I feel like Halloween may be trying
she definitely wants to take over, but he's trying to save it and not go the route that everyone is that, not, yeah, that not his dad wants him to go. Horror. All the people that are talking to him wants to kind of PG it up.
Yeah. So how I read it is, okay, so this is a park and a studio, right? Just like what it's based on. The dad gave Halloween, who was his daughter, the studio. He gave Sam, and let's just call him Sam, the park. Anytime Halloween shows up at the park, Sam gets bristly because she might be the older child or something. Right. But there's like very clear that the dad kind of favors her. Mm-hmm. And
maybe for creepy reasons,
he thinks she's going over his head. Right. Yeah. And getting things on the park. So the key thing as to why that reveal is important is because Sam doesn't know what's going on.
Yeah.
Right. Like Sam doesn't know what's happening. And up until that reveal, you assume that actually no one except for Big Dante knows what's going on. But as it turns out, Halloween is in on it. Yeah, I don't think she's necessarily causing it, but whatever freaky thing is going on at the park, Halloween is in on it, which does take us to like my only real gripe about this, and is that I didn't love that at the end of this volume, it's a cliffhanger. I wanted something. Like, give me something, right?
Yeah.
Give me a little bit of a resolution to one of the mysteries that we're seeing here. And turns out this character was in on it is not a resolution. It's itself a cliffhanger. So I was hoping not necessarily to know everything that was going on, but for them to give us something, for them to like take off the masks of one of the mascots, right? Because now we assume that potentially we know what's in there, but we really don't.
Yeah.
So I was hoping for something, just like something slightly more to, you know, it's like, That's how you keep people wondering about a mystery, right? You give them something,
right?
And they're like, oh, okay. So if this happens, then they start thinking about it. It's like, but what about this? And that's where they tune in next time.
That I think is my biggest complaint about this four issue collection is this four issues comprise the first issue. This is literally all set up from page one, page 113. This is all set up. This is it, you know, in Stephen's perfect world where you could do, you know, an original graphic novel. This is the amount of material it is. And then when I get to the next chapter, I'll put out the next chapter and we won't be, you know, forced to put out a monthly pamphlet.
I'm looking at the Image Comics website. So yeah, we are reading only the first four issues. Issues 5 through 8 are collected in volume 2, came out in October of last year. And that completes the first story arc, by issue 8. And then there is a volume 3, that comes out in June of this year, which collects issues 9 through 12. And it says Dark Ride plunges into its shocking conclusion. So they've taken 12 issues that we would normally read in a trade paperback, or maybe two trade paperbacks, and they've split it into three volumes.
I would like to do something that I very, very seldom do on the Major Spoilers podcast at this time. I would like to entreat Stephen, the editor-in-chief and chief cook and bottle washer, to throw volume 2 and possibly 3 into the future bin so that we can read them in the future, because I do want to know where this goes.
So do I. I mean, it is interesting enough. I think that there's, I mean, when I read this and by the time I got to the final page with Halloween and the creepy monsters, to me, it felt like, and maybe it's because Sam has red hair and he reminds me of Archie, and Halloween reminds me of Cherry Pop Tart, but whatever her name is.
Blossom.
Cherry Blossom. Yeah.
No, it's not Cherry Blossom.
Wait, Cherry Sherbert?
No, it's not Cherry Sherbert. Okay, what is her name? Cheryl Blossom.
Cheryl Blossom. Because
I had it right.
I read through this thing.
Cherry Pop Tart is entirely different.
I think she's in the Archie universe, dude. I read this as kind of like one of those Archie Comics Presents books. Because it feels like in that same vibe, and the art style is kind of the way, not, you know, completely into the style that we see in a lot of the into the Archie Horror Presents, or the Chilling Adventures, I guess is what they're calling it now. But it did, this book has that same kind of vibe, in that if you're familiar with Walt Disney, this is that dark version of it. If you're familiar with Archie Comics, Chilling Adventures is the dark side of that, and things get dark. So by the end, I was like totally okay with a lot of the violence and stuff that was in there. The child, I'm just going to say suicide, because that's what it essentially is viewed by a normal person. That is probably my biggest complaint about the issue. But otherwise, I would agree with you that I'm okay with reading the other issues. And I probably dig around here in our archive collection that Image sends out. I probably have all the other issues sitting here. Maybe not volume. Volume 3 comes out next month, so probably have those single issues sitting here as well, or at least we'll get the trade when that comes out, too.
You have the individual issues?
I'm saying I have the review copies that Image sends us,
providing
that they're in the right folder and didn't get lost. When that laptop went down, ladies and gentlemen, patreon.com/majorspoilers. Yeah. So, yeah, no, I don't disagree that I would like to find out how this story ends. And knowing that it now is only 12 issues long, mm-hmm. I'm totally down with telling people that I would recommend this if they're into the horror comic mood and they're okay with twisted takes on things that are familiar. I have no problem with this. I'm quickly becoming a Joshua Williamson fan. I'm loving what he's doing over in the Void Rivals universe with the Transformers and everything. So I'm digging his stuff, and I will definitely check out more of it. I like the art style too. Thought it was great. Final thoughts from Matthew.
I definitely agree. I feel like as this story progressed, my biggest question, my biggest recurring question, other than, oh dear God, why did they show me that, was, hey, what the heck is going on with Halloween? Why is Halloween, what the who and the thing and the thing? And then you get to the end and you're like, ah, ha, 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 this is all issue one. So if you're aware that you're going in for a cliffhanger, if you're aware that there is going to be some stuff there that creeped me out, and keep in mind, I've seen Zombie 2. I grew up on West Craven. West Craven Avenue. Yeah, just right down the hill. I lived right across from the cemetery when I was a child. That's true, by the way. Definitely, this is worth checking out. It is just short of Rush Right Out in a Buying Frenzy. And the only reason that it's short is because of the placement of the cliffhanger and the utter grotesquery. The
cliffhanger. Yeah, that was pretty creepy. Rodrigo, it final was. Thoughts?
Definitely the art is really excellent. It does different kinds of horror well. It shows you that sort of like really stretched out awful body horror. Also, it gives you like creepy mascots, you know, Five Nights at Freddy's style. It does all of that really well. I'm a big fan of it. I'm glad you guys liked it, because I was into it when I was reading it, and I was like, where is this going? So again, if you're okay knowing that volume one ends with a cliffhanger and doesn't really tell you much, this was just like a fun read. Like, mm-hmm. I just didn't know where things were going. Nothing went in the direction that I thought it was. There's like three time skips and four pages. Like, it's just like, and it like take structure, throw it at the wall. It doesn't matter anymore. Let's just figure out what the heck this little devil guy is up to.
Yeah. Yeah,
so I would definitely recommend it.
All right. We will take a look at Dark Ride Volume 2 in June. But until then, ladies and gentlemen, you can, if you found value in this show and you want to give a little back, head over to patreon.com/majorspoilers. Get access to a bunch of exclusive stuff you're not going to find anywhere else, including the Major Spoilers podcast pre-show for a mere $5 a month. You get 4 bonus episodes minimum. Find out more at patreon.com/majorspoilers. Next time on the show, we are taking a look at, oh, this one's going to be interesting, because while Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles number 150 is ending the IDW publishing run, we're going to go back and look at volume one of that series. Why? Because Liquid Cake demanded it. And also because we know that you love comics. We do too. And we will talk with you soon.
Fat the X-ray vision of Superman. I could save a few bucks and stand around and read through the covers of the comics on the stand. But although every other page would be backwards, I suppose I could still read the evens and the odds. Well, I don't know. Guess I haven't thought this all the way through. Plus, as soon as the comic book store guy knew, they kicked my butt out on the corner. What a major spoiler. What a major spoiler. Think about a better way. If I was hulking green or gray, I could just bust through that brick wall, take their comic books away. But then the little meat would deal with all the tanks and bombs and guns. Have you ever tried to read a series with all that going on? Guess I need to rethink this plan. How would I back and board my comics with such huge hands? Guess I already told ya. What a major spoiler. What a major spoiler. Yeah, yeah, yeah. What a major spoiler. What a major spoiler. Bob Stark Raven. operates like a man of iron. Might not be surprised if I'm that I might actually have the heart cold to follow an entire storyline. But would I really even need to read up on all those escapades? I mean, who needs such distractions when your sister's such a babe? But the downside is such a beast. Being shot up in a fun, be in the middle east with a king sign throwing soldier. What a major spoiler. What a major spoiler. Yeah, yeah, yeah. What a major spoiler. Whoa, 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 whoa. What a major spoiler.
This podcast is copyright 2024 by Major Spoilers Entertainment, LLC.
Say goodbye to your credit card rewards. Greedy corporate mega stores, led by Walmart and Target, are pushing for a law in Congress to take away your hard-earned cash back and travel points to line their pockets. The Durbin-Marshall credit card bill would enact harmful credit card routing mandates that would end credit card rewards as we know it. If you love your credit card rewards, tell your lawmakers, hands off my rewards. Tell them to oppose the Durbin-Marshall credit card bill.